I do this for my culture, 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 culture. Welcome back to For the Culture, right here on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM and WEAA.org. Absolutely, the voice of the community. I'm your host, Faraji Muhammad. Thank you so much for checking in and riding with me for the second hour tonight. We want to continue the conversation around the SAT adversity score, a new score that rates student hardships, asking a big question: will this help or hurt the achievement gap? But I think we should also look at maybe the possibility, because more and more schools are starting to move in this direction of eliminating the SAT altogether. Let me go back to the phone lines, hear what folks are saying about this adversity score, and possibly get their thoughts on that idea. 410-319-8888. Let's go to Claude in Randallstown, then Angel in Baltimore. Claude, thank you for checking in. Your patience. What's your take?
Hey, thanks for having me, Faraji. My take on the whole thing is when I look at other nations like China and Japan, Russia, they're kicking our butt. But they're not doing a lot of things that America continues to do.
Mm-hmm.
China, Russia, Japan, they diversified, but they don't make a big stink about race because they see each other as one nation. In America, we so worried about this race or that race getting ahead that we don't just try to better the whole system, the whole state,
yeah.
Education.
Yeah.
You know, testing scores, you know, Einstein wasn't good at testing. You know, there's a lot of people that learn in different ways that we haven't even tapped into. So the system itself, I do believe, needs to be reformed.
So do you think that this is even necessary to have a conversation about understanding where a student comes from, their background, their parents' educational background, their social, beyond just the scores? Do you think that's important?
I definitely know that it makes a difference in, you know, what a child is able to accomplish. But at the same time, some children come from highly challenged backgrounds and situations and prevail.
Right.
And circumstances, I don't really think it's ever a good job to lower the bar if that's what we're talking about in any
that's a good point, Claude. I don't think this is about lowering the bar as much as getting a full context of who that person is beyond the test score, beyond what you see on paper, to get an understanding of, you know, if you are a college admissions officer, you know, looking at how does a person – they might score off certain, you know, get high scores on the SATs or they do really well. There's this interest of like, wait a minute, this person, this young person has been able to overcome all of these issues, right? Whether it's their, where they came from, their household, all of these things, and they've been able to achieve. And, you know, we would want them to be a part of our college community. You know, I think that's ideally what the College Board is trying to go for. How would that be actually implemented, interpreted, and expressed? That's going to be another conversation, I believe. But I think they're looking at a person's ability and their willingness and desire to be great in spite of.
I mean, I would hope that their heart is in the right.
There you go. Uh-oh.
Some people do need a hand, like help, or that extra attention. But at the same time, I feel like that's another form of discrimination. Not to be ignorant to the point that you're making.
No,
but I do feel like that's also another form of discrimination. I like what the lady said about, you know, just take what's on the paper, you know, the essay, if it's about your past and your history, and go off of that. I think, like, you know, the race and who's in the household and how you got there, it's relevant, but it's irrelevant. And I think anybody who has the desire to go and get a higher education should have that opportunity.
You're right.
That's my take on it.
Hey, Claude, I like your take. Thank you so much for checking in from Randallstown. Let's go to Angel in Baltimore, then Cookie. Angel, what's your take on this, ma'am?
Hey, Farazi.
Hey, Angel.
Can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. So I agree with getting rid of the SAT scores altogether.
Okay.
I am a terrible test taker.
Oh, me too, Angel.
But I actually didn't do too bad because I just, like, put everything I had into it.
Yeah.
As far as preparing for it.
Yep.
But I agree with eliminating that, eliminating pictures, all that stuff, the admissions officer, like the interview piece from the college admissions. But I'm going to tell you right now how we can solve all of this.
Okay.
And some more problems, right? So you take the SATs to test your general knowledge, and then you get into college to take 2 more years of general knowledge. So if school was year-round, that's 4 semesters right there.
Boom.
That's 4 college semesters over the summer.
Come on.
If
boom.
If kids be around,
I like it.
Those last 2 years, they could be in the community college setting, taking those general education classes.
Yeah.
And then you could go to college for 2 years in your major.
So you're saying, it sounds like, and first and foremost, Angel, I love how you're calling in straight from the streets of Baltimore. I love it. Absolutely. But no, but real talk, I think that you're on to something, because if it takes 2 years to kind of get in your feet wet in whatever your major is, I think that is a long time. You should be able to jump into college. May take 6 months or so, maybe a semester, and then jump right into your major.
Right.
You know what I mean? I agree. But see, you know what? I think the year-round conversation, this year-round school conversation, I think I'm slowly growing to become a proponent of that, because I'm seeing that should be a need for that. And when I say year-round, it doesn't necessarily mean.
They lose a lot of information over the summer.
They do. They do. Absolutely.
Well, and then the other piece you had talked about real quickly about emotional intelligence.
Right.
Well, your brain isn't fully formed until you're 26. So, of course, you're not going to have emotional intelligence.
Wait a minute, Angel. Hey, wait a minute, Angel. You mean you're talking about some grown people still acting like children right now then?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know it. Okay?
Oh, stop. So if you're 40 years old right now, wait a minute. If you're 40 years old, what, you like 14 right now? Like you're like I'm a teenager now.
You know somebody like that too.
I do. I know. Unfortunately,
you
know I know a few
do.
People like that.
Look, some people ain't gonna like me for this, right?
Go ahead.
They always, marijuana is not, you know, harmful, but if your brain isn't fully formed, it is harmful to your brain.
Ooh.
Messes with your memory.
Ooh.
Messes with your reaction time.
Come on. You see, now you're trying to... Why are you trying to create a whole nother show right now, Angel?
Look, messes with your coping mechanisms that you never develop because you're dependent on that drug to take the edge off. That's another show.
That is another show. Oh, my goodness. Angel, I appreciate you from checking in from the streets of Baltimore with the kids. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
All right, Cookie, what's your take on this, ma'am? Adversity scores.
So I got my perspective in it, thinking that if they're taking away the SAT,
they're not. No, I'm not saying they are, Cookie. Let me make that clear. I'm not saying that they are. However, here's I want to clarify, because it has been, the SAT has been a controversial test because of the quote unquote the cultural bias that many people believe the SATs have. So colleges have actually made it optional rather than mandatory for applicants to submit the scores from the SATs or the other main standardized entrance test, which is the ACT. So it's optional for some colleges. And I'm throwing it out there myself, saying, okay, if we're having an adversity score along with our SAT score, and people still don't feel like that creates a level playing field, should we just remove the SATs altogether?
Okay. Is this going to help with the personality testing part?
Yeah. Mm.
And if it helps the students to get into college, and that way you'll be able to know exactly who they are, what
mm-hmm.
they like to do?
Mm-hmm.
At least in that way, they'll be able to understand themselves a little bit more because they can think on a different perspective.
Right.
Because everybody doesn't have the same thinking skills as someone else.
True.
And sometimes students shy away from answering in the classroom because they have to think. They feel that they have to think like someone else or piggybacking on someone else's thoughts.
Sure. No, so... But what about this adversity score? Do you think that this is necessary given where we are educationally, either in the city of Baltimore or around this country?
No, not in Baltimore. Only thing, not in Baltimore, because now it's so much going on that's surrounded around children education as it is today. And some of the testings, is the scores have been changed. The teachers are changing scores from whatever it may have been to whatever they need to have for the funding to continue. So you really don't know what the children are capable of. So if parents are saying that the scores have been changed because they know that their children aren't reading on their grade level, so the comprehension part of that as well. So not in Baltimore. It just needs, something else needs to change.
Something else needs to change. I appreciate you, Cookie. Thank you so much for checking in from Baltimore City. All right, let's go back to the phone lines, 410-319-8888. Irene checked in on my Facebook page and said, I have a problem with testing anyway because there are multifaceted issues that impact student success. And as we now see, there are ways around testing and college entrance. Moreover, every time changes take place, it happens when students of color start excelling at the test. Mm. It's like every time you cross the line, they start to move the line further up, right? And that's an ongoing challenge that we're finding just within any industry, and across the board, unfortunately. Let's go to Ms. Rita in Baltimore, then we'll go to Clark. Ms. Rita, thank you for checking in. What's your take on this?
Thank you for taking my call, Faraji.
You're welcome.
And I was listening to what you were saying. I mean, I work as a home aide for a lady who teaches in Howard County, and she told me that the real reason behind them changing, want to get rid of the SAT, moving towards that, is because the Asian students are scoring so far above the white students that they're kicking their butts.
Mm.
And they're scoring high on IQ tests and high on the SAT. And it's hard to say that you're a superior race when somebody is scoring higher than you, so you got to get rid of it.
Mm.
And so the people don't know. I never realized that until she told me. She said their scores are at. That's why they're taking over a lot of the colleges and a lot of the whites. They want to get rid of it now because it's evidence, you know, that I'm not number one. And I agree with the adversity score because some people are working and sending and going to college at the same time while others have their way paid and don't have anything to do but party if they want to.
Yeah.
So I have to take in consideration students who don't have a lot of money who are working and going to college. It's not easy.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. So this idea of, at first, I never heard, Ms. Reed, I have never heard of that that situation with Asian students outscoring, blowing out the SAT. Okay.
And they score higher on the SAT test and all the tests, especially in math.
Yes, ma'am.
They're blowing those tests away. And that's why they're getting in those colleges, and that's why they're trying to put a quota on them.
Oh, wow. Wow. So, but this adversity test, I think this is also moving because, I brought up the fact of emotional intelligence, because we are also getting into a working a workforce where it's not just about using people to fill roles. There's a changing landscape in businesses. Just like what we talked about the other day in terms of the ineligibility of young people to go into the armed services. the landscape for business and for public service of any kind, regardless of whether you're in the private or the public sector, is changing. It's not just about what the person is on paper. The person has to have the ability to work in a particular setting, to be able to work with other groups of people outside of themselves, to be able to handle tasks. They might be multitasking. They must be able to work in teams. I mean, there are a lot of new dynamics that exist right now beyond just what a person knows or the book knowledge that they have. And that's what I'm starting to see. And I don't know, Ms. Reed, if you're seeing this or if you're hearing about this, but I feel like the workforce is changing. We're becoming much more technologically advanced. So when you have young people who are either going into college or coming out of college, they have to be skill ready. Have to have the capacity and the ability to be technical, critical thinkers and not just regurgitate what a professor has shared with them.
Yes, and they have to have a strong foundation in reading and math.
Oh, yes.
And the English language.
And communications.
Yes, yes.
And communications.
But that's what behind, I didn't know that the Asian students were scoring with.
Yeah, I'm going to take a look into that. Ms. Rita, because that's very interesting. Not to say that she may be lying or anything, but I would really, that's not too far-fetched to believe. But I do want to get more information about that.
Yes, yes. Thank you, Faraji.
Ms. Rita, thank you. Always good to talk to you. Bye-bye. Let's talk to Clark out of Baltimore. Clark, what's your take on this adversity scores?
Well, I got a couple of seeds I want to share with you and the audience.
Okay, go ahead.
One, we always talk about the prison industrial complex, but we never talk about the education industrial complex. And it is indeed, in this capitalistic culture, an industrial complex. They always try to figure out how they can monetize it, such as SATs and other tests that says, oh, before you can begin your college, you have to take remedial courses, which, of course, is time and money, as one of your previous calls said. Secondly, listening to one Dr. Amos Wilson, I don't know if you're familiar with Dr. Wilson or not, but his work, one of his lectures was very enlightening, that in the 1950s, someone did a study. I believe the person who did the study was a Michel Joubert or something of that effect. Forgive me for not knowing the name fully. That study conducted on child development over in Eastern Africa, Uganda, and the neighborhood, established that young African children develop at a rate about four times as fast as young non-African children, or if you will, European children. African children of 4 months old were doing. Young European children were not doing until they were 2 years old. Mm. So those, when you are in this national or international race battle and you realize that, what do you have to do? You have to slow the development of those other people, in this case, you know, young Africans of the diaspora, so that your own people can appear to be a little bit better than they really are. Education is the method of doing that. Mm-hmm. There's always a reason and rationale for education. People develop an educational system so that they can further their culture, their ideas, their ways of approaching them. They don't do it for the growth of the nation or the people in particular. They do it for the growth of the people who are going to adhere to the ideals and ideas of the nation. And with that said, I've probably used my time, brother. Thank you very much.
Hey, no, Clark, before you jump off, I want us to talk about that because I think one of the things that we have to keep in mind as we have a study like that, I'm wondering, and maybe you can shed some light on this, I'm wondering, like, today's a black child, right, that is born in America, that is born within a system of governance that we currently have, that is born where our culture has been defined and redefined by both ourselves and others and others outside of ourselves, that are born maybe to young parents or parents who might be who might be on a scale of growth, development, knowledge. How does that child fit into that larger scenario that you speak about, because I feel like black children are at a different place. Like the black person that you see, essentially, the black person that you see in 2019 is not the same black person that was born in 1950. And I'm saying from a various, because of various dynamics, right?
Correct.
So how do we reconcile the educational or the education of a black child today, given all of the factors and all of the impediments, and given the structural issues, the systemic issues, given our the influence of culture, the given drugs, given the fact that we have single parent household, how does that play into the education of a black child today, based upon what you just shared with us? How do you think that would happen?
Well, there are a couple of ingredients. You're always going to have what do you call culture will. Now, yes,
wait a minute, say it again. I didn't hear you. You said you're always going to have what?
What you might consider casualties of war.
Oh, casualties. Okay.
All right, because England and their cohorts, if you will, that make up Europe, and by the way, Europe is not a continent, have declared war way back when in the 1800s that, hey, we're going to capture and subjugate people of color all around the world. That's what Europe and its cohort, or England and its cohorts, did. So today, what do you got? You got a lot of people, and you have to consider every generation of our people get traumatized.
Yep.
Every generation.
Yep.
Because trauma is a tool of oppression.
Yeah,
I agree. That shock and awe concept.
Yep. So, and are you, Clark? Go ahead. I want to ask you a question about that.
Remember what science tells us this day and age. I should say consider, because it's relatively new information, at least for me. What does DNA tell us about human development? That the knowledge of yesterday is carried through to the people of today through their DNA.
Mm.
Through the DNA of your grandfathers and great-grandfathers and great-great-grandfathers and grandmothers and great-grandmothers for women and great-great-grandmothers. That knowledge of survival and, what do you say, how do we call it, adapt and overcome, I think.
Yep.
The United States Marine Corps uses that phrase. Adapt and overcome. Black people are the oldest people on the earth. What else science tells us? That the first humans were found in Africa. The first remains of humans were found in Africa.
Yeah.
So God's true chosen people, God's first people, are African people.
Well, and you know what? I want to, and you know what, Clark? You bring up so many great points, because I think, and that was what I was going to ask about, the fact of trauma. That as much as we are highly intelligent, that knowledge is passed on from generation to generation and is embedded in our DNA, trauma can be embedded into our DNA. Just like you said, it can be used as a tool of oppression, and as well as fear, right? As well as being a servant or servile, you know, being losing.
Learned behavior.
Right. Learned conditioning. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Listen to the lectures by Dr. Joy DeGruy nowadays. So DeGruy. She's right on point. I love her lectures, man. Joy DeGruy has a lecture called How Are the Children?
Oh, yes, sir.
Okay.
Yes,
man,
sir.
You need to air that for the audience a time or two, once, you know, every month or so for a while, because we all need to understand that we are those children, each one of us.
Yeah, yeah, that's what it is right there. Hey, Clark, I love it, brother. Thank you so much for checking in, man. I really appreciate you sharing that insight. I got to take a quick pause, folks. My goodness. One of my listeners, man, I love you guys so much, man. Y'all brought it up that Asian American Harvard admits earned highest average SAT score of any racial group from 1995 to 2013 over an 18-year period stretching. Irene also checked in and said, look, it is true. The Asian students are slamming the test, but more black students are beginning to score so high on the SAT test until they are often accused of cheating or may have to retake the test. That's because the test is old. Might be getting to that point where it needs to be either changed, modified, or just taken away. I don't know. My goodness. Well, we will see this new rollout of this this average, this adversity score. The plan is to roll it out officially to 150 schools this year and more broadly in 2020, as reported by the Wall Street Journal. It was field tested by 50 colleges, according to Mr. David Coleman of the College Board in recent interviews. But it plans to roll out more broadly come in 2020. Man, there's a lot of things happening in 2020. So we will see. If you start to see SATs having this adversity score, check, trust and believe. You heard it first here on For the Culture. Just get prepared for it and check. And we will definitely see what the future holds for students, especially in Baltimore. I got to take my final break. When we come back, we'll talk to hip-hop artist Wayne Watts and talking about the work that he's doing to use culture to redefine the culture here in Baltimore City. Stay riding with us. It's For the Culture here on WEAA.
I do this for my culture.
All right, peace, and welcome back to For the Culture, right here on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM and WEAA.org. Absolutely the voice of the community. I'm your host, Faraji Muhammad. Thank you so much for checking in and riding with me, folks, for the final few minutes of tonight's broadcast. I want to switch gears here because we want to do our part to highlight local artists that are doing big things. So the brother that I have that's on the line right now, he had a major event that took place last night. We'll give him an opportunity to talk to us about it. But he is a Baltimore native, Denver transplant hip-hop artist who merges captivating storytelling with intricate rhyme schemes to create lush soundscapes. He's a scholar, and he has a penchant for dope rhymes and a rhythmic flow. And he is an educator. He's an innovative mind who comes from a family of musicians. And now he's carrying the torch with his woven hip-hop tales. He is the Fire Lane music artist dedicated to his craft in creating quality sounds and performance. His dynamism is front and center. And with his latest release of Nowadays, Mr. Wayne Watts plans to continue staking his claim as the hip-hop new artist to watch and honing his perspective as a creative in a world of revolution. It is with our honor and pleasure that we welcome to the show Mr. Wayne Watts. Good evening, Wayne. How are you, sir?
Hey, what's up, man? It's a pleasure to be on the show, man. Super excited to talk to you.
Oh, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to talk to you. It sounds like, Wayne, you're the type of artist that we often, people say, well, we need this type of artist, and you're that guy.
Man, that's a statement for stuff. I don't know if I'll put all of that on it, but
you're an educator, you're a scholar, yeah. And at the same time, you infuse that into your music. And how would you describe your music, Wayne?
I would say musically, I'm trying to connect generations, right? So if you listen to the album Nowadays, you'll hear like Negro spiritual sounding records, you'll hear blues, you also hear trap, you'll hear R&B, and the whole idea and the premise behind it was to say that we're really saying the same song, right? So, like, I think a lot of times we get caught up in being like, oh, yo, you're the artist that, you know, the educated artist, like, we all really are saying the same thing if you're listening. So you either hear points of black pain, black joy, you know what I'm saying? Like, but it's the same stories being told, and I think with the album that I came up with was more about like connection, and mm-hmm. it kind of like then became the catalyst to be able to kind of create the tour that we're actually on right now, which is bigger than the music, right? You know what I'm saying? So it's like you make the song and then you then go out and then cook that song out in its real form in the world.
That's what I'm talking about. Now, we have one of the tracks from the album nowadays. We have Favorite Song. I want to play Favorite Song so folks can get a full understanding of who Wayne Watts really is.
Oh, so that record right there, so that's not on the album, but it's a new song coming out. So the idea, Favorite Song is essentially thinking of, like, what your favorite song is as a person, right? Like, you're like, hey, this melody stuck to me, and I wanted to make that record for somebody, right? For somebody to be like, you're like my favorite song. So it's a cool little cadence and a vibe.
It's a cute little something. All right.
Yeah, so, yeah.
All right, let's check this out. This is Favorite Song by Wayne Watts. Check this out, folks.
You like my favorite song, play you all over again. You got me all up at night, the late on again. You got me all up at night, the late on again. It's a hell of a lie, it's a hell of a sin. Let me get back to the play like a spatula, whip it like spatula. Now whip it like Acura. When we coming up, these bluffing up. They don't go hard enough. I'll stay on their job enough. Came from the bottom, man. Where we headed to?
Yeah.
Guaranteed that you know now. Nobody better do.
Yeah.
Nobody better know. Ay, whoever that number know. Ay, you are like better me.
Better me.
I am like better you.
Better you.
You like my favorite song.
Play
it all over again. You got me all up at night. Till late on again. You got me all up at night. Till late on again. It's a hell of a lie. It's a hell of a sin. Play you all over again. Play you all over again.
Play.
Wanna have a little baby girl and play it all over again. Come on, a baby boy, and play him all over again. And take him all home again. And put him on road again. Ay, we did enough again. You're only bluffing it. He kept on fumbling. I just recovered it. Got it like Zutton, man.
Yeah.
Or maybe like Zutton Bird. You should tag me in pictures now. We just tagged up the world. Play me all over again. Play me all over again. Took me really just a while. Took the Nissan to a Benz. I'm gonna take the Nissan to a Benz. And take the 1-1 to a twin.
Yeah.
You can take what you would take. 800 million we gon' get. Cause you like my favorite song.
Play it all over again.
Oh my goodness, that was Favorite Song by Wayne Watts. Hey, Dre Day, let's give him a warm round of applause for that joint.
Man. Thank you. I really appreciate that. I really appreciate that.
Man, first and foremost, I like the flavor of that one, Wayne. What was the inspiration behind that?
I think it was just really being inspired by love, right? Like, being inspired by love and what it does. And then, you know what I mean, just coming up with simple melodies that a kid could pick up, but also held true to universal feelings.
Right. But you got your flow. Your flow is like that new style flow that we hear right now.
Yeah. So the idea in the flow was to be able to say, hey, can I put this in the... I love the flows that the kids cook up with, right? Like, the kids cook up with some... Here's why I say that. Because the flows that they cook up with are more universal than the flows that we cooked up with before, right? So if you take that cadence translates into every language.
Right.
Right? So if you put it anywhere, it's going to go. That bop is going to go.
Right.
So I wanted to have the bop of that and then the feel of a record that your grandmother would like a Sam Cooke record being like a minute and 59 seconds long. So I wanted it to feel like the song should be longer. You know what I mean? And you're like, okay, that part of it. So it's kind of combining those two.
Right. It's very simple. You're saying simple melodies, simple lyrics,
yep.
But it still is very profound because it's about the expression of the feelings, not necessarily about the words spoken, but more about the feelings that's generated from it.
Exactly.
Look at that. We're going to have me up here be a music scholar. Wayne Watts.
Go ahead, man. I'll tell you. I'll take out what you put down.
But I love that line. You know, when other cats fumbled it, you just recovered it. I love that. I love that. Wayne, you man.
And we all have been in that situation where somebody fumbled. He's like, oh, that's
hey,
a fumble.
Man. Hey.
Hey, I'm here.
Hey, brother, don't get me up on here confessing. but no. So how long have you been doing music, Wayne?
Man, I've been doing music since I was like 8 years old.
Right.
So, yeah, music's always been important to me. My parents played music, so my mother plays lead guitar. My father played bass. My grandfather used to sing on, like, stoop steps and stuff like that. You know
right.
what I'm saying? He used to sing on the corners. You know what I mean? So, Yeah, this music's really been in the family. I've been doing this since I was 8.
That's what I'm talking about. We got a caller and a listener of ours that wants to check in and talk to you. Donna checking in from Baltimore. Donna, what's your question, your comment for Mr. Wayne Watts?
What's up, Donna? How you doing?
Pretty good. How you doing, Wayne?
Good.
Well, I mean, I grew up in music, too, as a child, and my instrument was piano. So I love the piano combination with the woman's voice and the piano and then you. And, you know, one of the things I would like to see our African-Americans who get into hip-hop and you know, the various forms of music, get more instrumentation in the music. Mm-hmm. Because the piano, the flute, you know, the guitar, all those kind of enhance the voice that comes into it. And I wanted you to elaborate on how we can get more of our young people who go into, you know, hip-hop and other forms of music to get more into the instrumentation, because we've lost that. You know, our brothers back in the day, you know, our past musicians, they either played guitar, piano, you know, et cetera, et cetera. They were just so excellent, not only in voice or singing, but also in instrumentation. How can we get our African-American young people back into piano? And our final question is, did somebody actually pay that piano piece, and who did? And thank you so much, and then I'll hang up and listen. Thanks.
Thank you, as always, Donna.
Second question? What did she say with the second question?
She said, who was playing the piano in that piece?
Oh, bet. All right, so the first part is, the second part I'll say, so my cousin Michael Thompson out in Denver, Colorado, played the chord progression on that. So, shout out to him. He's in a band called the Hot Lunch Band.
I like that, the Hot Lunch Band.
Yeah, the Hot Lunch Band. So they gig out in Denver, big group out there, but he's from here. So, he played the chord progression on that. And as far as getting young people into music, I would say how you do it is you really, I think the responsibility of that falls on older musicians that want to hear it, listening to the new cadences and playing around it and then going to centers and starting programs to just give accents of that in the music that's currently being made, right? I think what happens sometimes is that, like, when you're super musically trained and you're used to hearing that, you're like, I don't hear nothing, y'all not playing nothing. But they are doing really interesting things with cadences that would sound even better with a dope bass line. You know what I'm saying?
Like, yeah, I hear you.
Flute. You know what I'm saying? So they already have that part. So what I would say is, taking it upon ourselves to really do that, right? So, like, if you know, a kid around the way that or people who speak of this kid that makes music and stuff like that, you know, really pulling them up. Like, I like what you did with that. Listen,
right.
Musically, we can do this and doing the show together, right? It'd be dope. I think that there has to be more implementation of, like, jazz musicians to accent hip-hop because we really are jazz musicians. Or, like, whatever you would call that genre of improvisation, we all really come from that. So I think it gives a great chance to be able to do it.
Wayne, how has Baltimore influenced your music? How has Baltimore, growing up in the city, seeing where the city is currently and how the city has evolved in some places and still kind of stayed the same, I think, in other areas, how has that influenced who you are and your expression?
I think it's influenced, like, everything. Like, currently right now, we're at the Food Project. So I'm actually around, like, 3 dope young musicians right now. I'm going to have y'all change your names out real quick. So say your name. We on air. Say your name and what you do.
My name is Marquis, and I rap. All
right, what's your name? You did the beat, though. Hold on, what's your name?
My name is G-Man. I rap.
Yep, you got me, though?
My name is Mini-Me, and I rap, buddy.
Cool. So saying that to say I'm around that, and they influence me, right? Like, you know what I'm saying? So
yeah.
The kids really influence me. And then just I would say, like, just growing up in the city, there's so many stories to tell, right? And I think our story never really gets told authentically because you don't hear us as the narrator of the story. It's usually somebody telling our story for us, right? So I think musically, that has always been something there. And then I think it's the hidden gems of, like, Hubie Blake, right, and Billie Holiday growing here, right, like Chick Webb. Like, you have all of these pockets of here, and then, you know, other tremendous singers and rappers and people that had these platforms to do stuff, and then it's not represented anywhere else. So I think it's always given me a drive to be like, I'm from the best place in America.
Yeah.
You just don't really know it. You know what I'm saying?
Right, so, right,
like,
right.
Think, Right. You asked in terms of my music, I think that's where all of the passion you hear in my voice comes from, being like, y'all don't, not saying y'all, like, I would say, looking and seeing, like, this is the greatest place to be from.
Right.
So I'm going to make sure I'm going to light up every time you talk to me, whether I'm living in Denver now, whether when I want to move internationally, you're going to get Baltimore out of me, you're going to get it around the people that surround it, and it's dope of people than me that didn't get an opportunity to do it. Facts, you know what I'm saying? So I'm now at the Food Project right now. What we just did was a collaboration where we had the Creative Nomads, the Food Project, and we did a songwriting workshop with young people. So the show last night was dope, but today was better because we brought out 9-10 different artists in here, and the kids got a chance to cook up music with musicians across the city and outside of the city. So we had, you know what I'm saying, artists from Denver fly in, you know, and all that type of stuff. So saying that to highlight all the things I was saying, I think Baltimore stays with me because when I think about the city, I see, like, how amazingly, how gold we are, right? And a lot of times gold is undervalued, right? Mm. But, like, being able to know what gold really costs and what it's made to make it, I see it in all of it. So I want to make sure that I'm part of just showing a part of the shine, you know what I mean? So that Absolutely. The people that shine better than me and the young kids that shine better than me and the old people that never got a chance to do it, they get their chance to get their shine.
Absolutely. Folks, if you're just tuning in to For The Culture here on WEAA, we're talking to hip-hop artist Wayne Watts. He's more than a hip-hop artist. I would just say he's a musician because he incorporates so much more, not just hip-hop. He's also incorporating some soul. He incorporates some gospel. Now, Wayne, can I just, what we heard from Favorite Song, is that New New? Uh-huh. Is that our exclusive here on WEAA?
So that's New New. We just came up with that, like, right? So we just launched the tour. So we launched the Drink Crate Inspired Tour the beginning of this month. And that's the first time I gave it out to radio. So y'all got it. Y'all the first one. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's the coolest thing about this whole thing. And in the tour, what we're doing is an 8-city, 8-school, 8-action service tour. So Baltimore was the second stop. We went to Atlanta first. We're going to Philly tomorrow. And we're cooking across the country doing shows, but also having artists give back in their passion point and working with kids making songs. So you guys got a chance to hear an exclusive record.
Wayne Watts. We got to give him another round of applause for that New New right there. Hey, look, I like it. Hey, Wayne.
Breaking news.
I like that. Go ahead.
But no, real talk. I like it a lot, Wayne. Look, because I'm so happy and we're certainly humbled that you decided to use this platform for the culture to share your
Man, my
your
father went to Morgan, so I had to, right?
Oh, like come father. On, man. Come on. And, you know, this is graduation season right now.
Yep.
So this is graduation.
To everybody that's graduating, really, y'all are what will save everything. So, like, congratulations to all the graduates. We are super excited to see what you accomplish in this world.
That's what I'm talking about. Now, last night, you talked a little bit about it, but I wanted to give people a full breath and context of what you did last night. Dream, Create, Inspire Tour. It kicked off at the Motor House, live musical performances, local pop-up shops. An interactive for creatives only showcase. This was a full platform for the creative of all different types.
Yeah, absolutely. So what we did, like I said, across the country, we're doing shows. And what we do is we want to make sure that the shows are authentic to the city in which we're having them in. So we had amazing artists. We had Easy Jackson. He's a phenomenal artist.
Oh, I know Easy. I know Easy Jackson. I went to school with Easy Jackson.
Yeah, Easy's hard. Yeah,
he's my man,
dope,
though.
Yeah, so,
big shout out to Easy.
Did that. Shout out to him, Black Root. So he curates a night at the Motor House. So if you're an artist, you know, want a platform, please holler at Black Root. So he performed Greenspan. My guy, he's a phenomenal artist. So he did that. And then Graffiti Tech was on the ones and twos. And I performed, but also we do this segment called Creators Only, where we then curate new songs and new content with the crowd, right? So, like, you know, we do our sets, and then it's like, okay, now we're about to build a hook from scratch, right? So we did that by incorporating books. So Kadwani, Fidel's book, Hummingbird in the Trenches, we
Come
had
on.
That.
Big shout out to Kadwani. Yep, another one.
Yeah, Mm-hmm. So we gave it. We gave that book out to somebody in the crowd and had them pick a random phrase from it. Made a song about that. You know what I'm saying? So that's what we did, utilizing Easy, Black Root, Greenspan, and all the artists in there. We also had vendors, so black-owned businesses being able to sell T-shirts and merch and things like that.
Yeah.
And then a lot of the artists I just mentioned, all of them actually have their own collectives that they represent, whether it's healthy eating, whether it's, you know, lyricism, whether it's other ways of giving back. Johnny Graham, Dr. Johnny Graham, was in the building. He's a musician and also a professor at Howard. You know, so we had just a bunch of collectives. He runs something called the Our Dream Foundation here that gives a platform for entrepreneurs to do Shark Tank. So every artist that we had really is an activist as well, right?
That's
so
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's what we did. And then, like I said, today what we did was take that platform and then work with the kids with Creative Nomad. So that's a collective of artists that give back, and they do events such as songwriting workshops like we do. So, yeah.
So Wayne, I know you're going to be on this tour, but yep. are you going to be making your way back to Baltimore? When is the next time you're going to be making your way back to Baltimore?
That's the thing. So I definitely, yeah. So the thing is, we're looking to extend what we're doing, right? So we don't want it to just be like, hey, we did the show and we out. Like, so we'll be working with organizations that we've, you know, been doing growth partnerships with out here. So, like, we did a songwriting workshop with the House of Diamonds, which is a dope spot for artists in the city, and then the B organization. So these places that we've been, you know, connecting with will start doing some type of programming, you know what I mean, on a consistent basis.
Yeah.
Whether it's virtual, you know, that piece, or whether it's us coming here and setting up shop. So yeah, I'm always gonna be coming back home. You know what
I'm saying?
That's
what I'm talking about.
Yeah, and it really, the thing is, what I like about it, I kind of see me as a ambassador of home, right? Like everywhere I go, I bring home with me, and then a link to then connect home there, right? So it's like what we've been curating up in Denver, artists from Baltimore, like Easy and them, they'll be coming out to Denver to do shows, right? You know what I'm saying? So that's kind of being able to extend the platform and our message and our, and you know, like the goal that I was talking about earlier in the interview.
Hey, well, look, you know, I want to put this out there. Wayne, when you come, as you come through the city, whatever you're doing, either in Baltimore or around the country, I want this to be your platform, Wayne. I want you to come back to WEAA. When you got some new music, when you're doing anything in the community or across the country, you hit us up first, so that way we can show you the proper love, because we need more ambassadors for our great city. And the work that you're doing, the connections that you're making, the relationships that you're creating here and, of course, abroad, this is all going to work, man. This is exactly what Baltimore needs, and this is what makes Baltimore so special. So I know you can go to a lot of other radio stations and a lot of other platforms, but trust me, when you get back here, we got to have you in studio and show you some of that real love, brother, because we thank you for that.
I definitely would, man. Here's home, man. Here's home.
Yeah.
You know, I would say, here often means everything. Home means here often means everything, and this has been everything for me, you know? So
yeah, I love it. I love it. I love it. Hey, Wayne, I appreciate your time. Keep doing the great things that you are doing as an artist, as an activist, as a human being, brother. But we thank you so much. How can people get in touch with you, Wayne?
So they can follow the tour on social media. So the tour is at Dream Create Inspire Tour. That's at Dream Create Inspire Tour. That's on IG. That's on Facebook. If you want to follow me specifically, then it's at DK, a.k.a. Wayne Watts. That's at DK, a.k.a. Wayne Watts. Love to politic with you guys. If you want to join our team, please send us an email. It's the same as createinspiredtour@gmail.com. So thank y'all so much for allowing me to be on your platform. I love y'all. I can't wait to come into the studio next time I come home and rock.
Hey, that's what I'm talking about. You're about to get a new follower here on all of your platforms. Wayne Watts! Thank you so much, sir, for being so good for the culture.
All right. Talk to y'all later.
All right. Peace. Oh, my goodness. I like that. Hey, Dre, why we ended on that one? We should play favorite song again. Can we play that again? There we go. Let's play that again. One more time. Yes.
You like my favorite song?
Okay.
Play all over again.
Okay.
You got me all up at night. The late on again.
It's favorite song, folks.
You got me all up at night.
It's For the Culture, your favorite song. It's a hell of a line. It's a hell of a scene. Hey, look, I want to give a big shout out to everybody that was a part of the conversation tonight. I want to thank all of you for being a part of the conversation, both online and on air. Thank you. I want to thank our very special guest, Wayne Watts, who you're listening to right now. I want to thank my dynamic production team. I want to thank Ms. Mallory Pinker-Pierre, my producer, Alex Blanc, my production assistant, Worldwide West, and my man Dre Day for making me sound so good. And, of course, all of the staff here at Morgan State University for doing their part to make great communication students, getting them ready for the next chapter of their life. Thank you. Thank you so much. Make sure y'all continue the conversations. Hit us up on all social media platforms. You can follow yours truly at Faraji Muhammad on IG and on Twitter. I got enough Facebook friends. But if you want to follow me on IG, you can hit me up at Faraji, F-A-R-A-J-I-I, Muhammad. I'm on Twitter under the same name. And let's continue the conversation. I love it. I absolutely love it. I want to thank all of you. Stay tuned. Up next is LaDawn Black, my big sister, for In the Groove. So stick around for that. Oh, my goodness. I'm feeling this right here. I'm kind of feeling this right here, Dre. So sorry, Alex Blanc. So sorry. Tomorrow, we talk to the owner of Universal Circus. Yes, we're going to talk to him. We're going to talk to him tomorrow about what we can expect as Universal Soul makes their way back to Baltimore this summer. So we'll have that conversation with you, with him, Mr. Cedric, tomorrow. Yes, yes, yes. Make sure you check out WEAA.org for all the latest podcasts of For the Culture, as of course my colleague today with Dr. K. And you can also get all of the latest news happening at home and abroad that can all be found on WEAA.org. As always, never be afraid to never be afraid to challenge what's wrong. Stand for what's right while being yourself in the process. I look forward to talking to you tomorrow for another set of great conversations right here on For the Culture, here on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM. Absolutely the voice of the community and, of course, the voice of exclusive music. Let's just ride this out. Talk to you tomorrow, family. Peace. You got me all up at night, till late in the game. You got me all up at night, till late in the game. It's a hell of a line, it's a hell of a sin. Play you all over again, play you all over again. Wanna have a little baby girl and play her all over again. Come on a baby boy and play him all over again. And take him all home again.